This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
Time to move on to all things India. What is going on in that fabulous country, Mark?
Well, welcome to our two guests. Our two guests are a couple from India. Recently, the last 4 months, have been joined by a baby. So congratulations to you for that. I'm surprised that you're willing to come on air so soon after. It's a big achievement. So welcome. I want to let you introduce yourselves because I think you pronounce your name so much more beautifully than I ham-fistedly do say. So introduce yourselves and let's start talking about one of the things that you do well, which is chai, this beloved drink.
Yes. So I'm Gauri.
Gauri?
Yes. And
I'm Apurv.
Apurv? See, that's the thing. I could say Apu and stop and then I just ruin it. Welcome to Joy 94.9 and thank you for coming into the Escape Hour. Your life revolves around one of the most endearing and beloved of Indian foods. So talk about chai.
Yeah, so I think chai has been a part of our lives since we were in India. And of course, since we ever came back to Melbourne, we got soaked into our coffee culture so easily. Mm. And we totally started missing chai at a point in our lives. So we said, let's just keep trying chai everywhere. And it just never hit the mark. And then we said, okay, we're going to try and make it ourselves. So we started doing this in markets and put up stalls for making chai the way we make it at home. And ever since then, we're just brewing chai for hours and hours for everyone in Melbourne now.
So you're both from different parts of India.
Yeah.
Right. So how does the chai differ?
So we
have like two different blends. So one blend is up from north, which is, we call it as a morning blend, which has all the kickstarter spices to just, you know.
So more ginger,
tamarind. Right. Yeah, there's ginger, there's pepper in it.
So black tea.
Black tea is always the base of chai. So you have black tea.
And so a bit of caffeine there.
Yes.
Actually, I think I have to clarify what a masala chai really means. Chai means tea, essentially. And when you add any spice to the black tea, it becomes masala chai.
So masala is the magic word
for spice.
Masala chai.
Yes, so masala is really chutney. Just a spice mix.
Yeah.
It could be anything. Now, chai that is from the central part of India, which is the masala from the central part of India.
Apurv's.
Absolutely. It's completely different, the kind of spice mix that they use, to the spice mix which my little hometown uses, because it's a colder part of India. So they use all the heat spices like ginger, pepper, and all cinnamon, cloves, all those things that warm you up.
Mm.
And Apurv's part is really dry, a bit hot. So they use, like his blend, his mum's style is to use mint,
fennel,
cardamom, cooling spices that sort of
just make you, you know, feel comfortable in that hot weather.
Yeah. So that's how the spices blends are different.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily a spice mix is going to be the same as the one that you've had in North. It's the different style of mixes.
So you've decided to have AM and PM as.
Yeah. Yeah, we had to have both because we were who chai's better? And we didn't want to get into the controversy. So let's have both. And
so you got very diplomatic on this and just decided to have two instead.
Exactly. So, So now we have like two chai blends. One is the morning chai, we call it. And one is the afternoon chai. So the afternoon chai is just a calming one, which is like from my town.
Yeah.
Which just relaxes you. And Gauri's just give you
a kickstart.
Wake up, good morning, chai.
Yes.
So, historically, where does chai comes from? So, you know, have you had that all the time in India? But if I want to, you know, a little bit of a history. So, if I want to know where it came from,
So, if you say, you can definitely say the British actually introduced tea to India. They initially, I can't remember the time exactly, but they really wanted to break the monopoly of China over the tea.
Yeah.
And which is why some of them actually brought some of the tea and started planting that in the eastern part of India.
So that's Darjeeling.
That's right. Darjeeling
and
Assam and all the places that get a lot of rain. So the tea started growing really well. They used to export all the good tea to the UK and just sell all that tea from there. However, there was this obviously cheap quality tea, which had no market. And they just thought, there's so many people in India, why don't we sell it to them? And that could be the way of making more money from India itself. Mm. So they actually launched...
colonialism.
They're smart.
They're very smart businessmen, I have to say. So
ruthless,
they launched...
I think is probably a better word.
They've actually given now chai to India, so I'm not going to say anything about bad about them.
But the Indians made it special.
Yeah. That's what So they were very smart. So they launched this huge campaign of selling chai in the trains, because if not 1 billion then, but it was a lot of population using north to south the trains in India. So they launched this campaign of introducing that into the trains of India.
The chaiwala.
With the chaiwalas and chai. And that's how chai became just everywhere in India, and everybody started selling chai. Now, chai was just essentially black tea. Mm.
But Chinese style.
Not
the British adaptation.
No, it was black tea with milk. Basically.
Ah, right.
So the chai always is like black tea brewed with milk.
So at least you can say it's an English breakfast, but
exactly.
It's not cold milk going into the tea. It's boiled with the black tea. Now, it could be because of the milk that time wasn't pasteurized or whatever reasons. But now, if you don't boil milk with the chai or the black tea, it's not chai. I call it tea.
So the chai that's sold now on the trains, is that with spices or is just black tea boiled with the
brewed with the milk?
It varies, but most prominently it's with spices now.
Yeah.
So what happened, the tea was of low quality, so Indians were not liking the taste of that chai, initially.
Yeah.
So people from different part of India, they tried to mix like some spices to just make it edible and drinkable, So they were drinking it, having the caffeine hit, and they were enjoying it. So by then, now with that whole time, chai has evolved on its own with like different spices and different people using like different spices at different times of the day.
I just think Indians can't do without spices. They just put spice in everything, so they had to do it with the tea.
The rest of the world thanks you, because it's one of the finest cuisines in the world.
So now it's masala chai, which is just the West knows masala chai is chai now.
Yeah.
So it's essentially that.
So you've adapted both of your styles. So let's talk about the home cuisine briefly. Just take us through what is a really typical kind of menu from both of your hometowns.
So at my place, I will basically have like, there will be one lentil dish, one of the dish with like all veggies in it, and then roti, of course.
Yeah.
And I like rice, so my mum makes rice for me.
Yeah.
But
and the sauces have a lot of... Not as much coconut as further south?
There's no coconut in, like, where I come from. But there's a lot of influence from a different state, a neighboring state from, like, Maharashtra, which is, like, Mumbai. So we have, like, a lot of people from that state. So we use that kind of, spices in it, a little bit sweeter on the side. We have, like, many people from west of state, like Gujarat as well. So we have, like, sweet, like, they put a lot of sugar in their food. Mm. So in like lentils as well, we add sugar to the lentils. So it's all fused like where I come from, because it's a central India. So there are people from every part of the state, country.
Yeah, so I think essentially if you talk about people from north and central part of India, the plate would, like a general meal would have a roti, a lentil and a vegetables, which Apoor just mentioned.
A thali.
Yeah. And maybe a raita, because yogurt is again a great food to have in every meal of yours. However, just the way you make the dal would be quite different. Like if in the north where I am from, I wouldn't put sugar in my dal at all. Like there'll be no sweetness in dal. However, ghee would be there. Ghee is something that you give a tadka, which is like a tempering with, which is always there. But Apoor's mum would put sugar in her dal, which is completely like, why would you ever put sugar in the dal?
But, the controversy.
But
I love it now, because it's such a different taste, because you think you would never put sugar in dal, but that's something that Indore has got from a neighbouring state, Gujarat, and they put a bit of sweetness.
Because the sugar cane in there that grows so well.
I don't know, but I think they put sugar in everything, and so whatever Apoor eats, it's sweet. So I'm like...
They're the Indian Americans. They like sugar in food. You're enjoying 94.9.
I've missed my favorite show on Joy. What do I do? Podcasters to battle!
Joy Podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry, our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9, fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
We've got two great guests, Apoor and Gary, and we've been talking about chai. And Laurie called and asked us a great question about chai. What can we do for vegan chai tea? Because traditionally, we're talking about milk. But yes, if we want a vegan alternative.
So traditionally, like chai back in India is always with cow's milk or buffalo milk. Mm-hmm. And then you add like lots and lots of sugar to it. But here we have like many options. Like we can do soy chai, which is again vegan, and then we have like almond milk, coconut milk, but I basically suggest having with like soy, because soy gives that nuttiness to it as well.
I think we got introduced to that soy milk here. We never really thought soy chai could taste nice, but I understand now. However, the chai that we make is absolutely vegan. Because sometimes I think the chai here, lots of chais in the market are actually mixed up with orthodox tea and honey, which is a wet chai. And that's the general perception of people thinking that the chai is meant to be like this. However, in India, you'll never have chai with honey. It's something that you only use when you are sick with cold or something. Mm. So the chai that we have is basically just plain black tea and spices. So it's absolutely vegan friendly. Whatever milk you add to it is your choice.
So the soy milk you said you recommend as the best alternative. Yeah. Doesn't that get a little bit denaturated with heat, or it's all right?
It's pretty good. It adds a beautiful nutty flavor to the chai, which actually complements it quite a lot. But it's personal, really.
And also for people that might have some gluten intolerance, is the chai gluten free?
Yes, absolutely gluten free. I think the questions you're asking me are great, because I feel really confused. I think the West has confused chai a lot. There was no issue of chai being gluten-free and vegan. And, you know, I just think these are questions that have just complicated around chai. It's a very simple drink, and it was never meant to have gluten.
I think when people want to make them a little bit more upmarket, they add the honey, they add sort of flour, and then makes it.
See, it's a very simple drink that every single person who has just a few bucks in the pocket to a rich guy drinks it. So it's a very simple drink that everyone and anyone drinks. So it can't be overly, you know, special in India. I think it's for everyone.
Well, thank you. That's great.
Now, guys, during the break, we were talking about train travel in India, which is a must-do. I have been to India, and I absolutely adore being on those trains. You get to meet the locals, and you have some great chai on the trains. You have family in the north, in the centre, in the south. How do you get from A to B? You train travel?
So, yes, when we go from Melbourne, we usually, you know, take a flight, land to Chennai, and then from Chennai we'd start a train journey. I know it takes a lot of time, it takes like 2 days, but we love it. That's a time to, you know, spend with our family and know more what's happening in the train, you know, what's happening in the country, because that's when you talk to like different people there. And everyone in the train, I don't know, they become very friendly. So they start sharing food, chai, and then you just start non-stop talking to each other, playing cards and whatnot.
And the sleeper trains are great. I know, you know, you're supplied with the pillows, sheets and blankets.
Yep.
You can buy food on board, or you can buy food at any
absolutely,
station.
Yeah.
And it's just a great way to travel from A to B. So
you usually travel in air conditioning classes. Like you don't really travel sleeper class anymore, because that's what the general, you know, picture people have, that the people are traveling in trains and sleeper class and
people
on the top of the trains and things like that. But that's not
wrap.
Yeah, but that's not how we travel anymore. It's just that you take a normal air conditioned coach, and then you get pillows, everything is clean, you talk to people, you eat food, and you just interact.
I know, my last trip I got separated from my friends, and I was in a carriage with a family. There were, I don't know, four kids and three adults and me in this little section of the train, and we all, you know, we went to sleep, woke up, and they were giving me food and talking to me and wanting to know what I was reading, and it was just a great experience. So highly recommend.
You just experience the real Indian family feeling in a train, I believe, even though if you're travelling alone, I guess.
And it is just, it is just a great way to travel. I mean, India is a really big country, and the other thing is the trains are certainly, as good as flying. I think it's definitely the best way to go. You two are married?
Yes, we are.
Okay, yeah. So one thing... someone just said you're about to have a baby.
No, we have a baby. Four months old now.
Oh, God.
So we call
no
actually
you
this
love
baby...
Chai so much. You need to stay awake, don't you?
No, to be honest, we call this our second baby. Chai is definitely our first baby. That has gone through a lot of milk in these years, and the second baby is nowhere near to that much. So... Yeah.
Yeah, so what Australians see on TV and movies, obviously, are these amazing weddings that last for a full week. What is that all about and how does that all happen? It just looks so spectacular. Did you two do your own Bollywood dance together at your wedding, and did you, you know, have to have this extended wedding that went on for what seems like decades, but it looks like a lot of fun?
So I think we had a wedding for like 5 days.
Yeah,
so it was like five consecutive days where we were just, you know, basically dressing up, eating, dancing, drinking, and that's it. So that was like 5 days of non-stop partying, basically. And
a great way to start your life together.
It is a great way of...
Exhausting.
And expensive.
Oh, I bet it is.
Expensive.
How many outfits do you need for 5 days?
Well, I used to say five multiplied by two, because you'll change to at least a day, so you'll have 10 outfits, sure.
Recently, when we were in Udaipur, we went down Wedding Street, and it is a huge industry in India, isn't it?
It is a big massive industry now.
Yeah.
Like caterers, you know, decoration, and, you know, the food-wise as well now, like all the international chefs and people from everywhere in the world, they're coming there, and, you know, you can have food from anywhere and everywhere in your wedding. So that's a new craze.
So not
craze.
Just the traditional...
No, so they're So in that 5 days, you have the traditional bit, but again, because it's like you want to make sure everyone is happy, so you cater for everyone. Mm-hmm. So if people are coming from Australia, you will have something different for them, you know.
I think it's becoming very fashionable now.
It is.
It's becoming a trend that actually is going beyond the traditional part of India and just making it traditions of India and making it very modern and stylish, and bring the food, different types of food, have dances which are not necessarily Indian or Indian. So it's becoming quite a bit of statement, I have to say, that have a big wedding sort of a thing.
But let's pick up on that word fashionable, and that's one of the things we were talking about off air. Both of you are very well dressed, both of you are architects by trade or profession, sorry, not trade.
Yeah.
And both of you have, I mean, you're wearing a shalwar kameez, beautiful, stylish.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the prism that people look at India quite often in its history, instead of this very cool modern India that's very stylish, very funky, very progressive, highly educated, this amazing chicness that's the chic India, modern India. So talk to us about that, because you're a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think, India is becoming real. Not, I think it was very trendy even when I was there. I think that's the reason. We both were studying architecture and design. We were completely away from the IT industry, although at that time as well, our parents pushed us to study engineering, be an engineer or a doctor. It was just that push. However, we love the design aspect, and Apoorv and I, we both were loving the way India was coming up together at that time as well in design industry. And now when we go back to India, we just think, like, the fashion, like the style, I just think sometimes I don't want to buy my clothes in Melbourne, because I just think they're so much more trendier and colourful and different in styling than coming back and buying things from the West, because the creativity of the style and tradition is there. But they are just making it much more fashion that you can carry it easily by working. So not necessarily you're at home anymore. So people are becoming very fashion conscious. They know what's going on abroad or overseas, what kind of fashion is in. And then they fuse it with the Indian styles of clothing, which is very interesting, because you find that different and you won't find that garment in any of the general...
But it's so colourful and beautiful at the same time, isn't it? There's something about Indian fabric and the way women wear their beautiful clothes. It just is in a gaggle of Indian women, you just have to stop when you're a Westerner and think, God, that is just so beautiful.
I get really scared of winters for only one reason in Melbourne, because I can just see black, grey, browns and blues.
But that's what you're a Melburnian then if you do that.
Yeah. You look at him because he just sort of camouflages. Apoor's wardrobe just he just wants to blend in. And I'm like, I can't. You have to put some colour on. We are Indians, you know. And I just can't.
I love it. I love it. That's the way it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think the other fascinating thing that I'm always fascinated talking to people who are either not contemplating travel to India or a bit wary about travel to India. And what I find is that they think that culturally India is so different that they're going to have this massive culture shock when they get there. And it's actually not the case. India is full of amazing people just getting on and living their lives. And sure, there's poverty, but there's also a lot of beauty in the country. And one of the things that I have come to love about India is this amazing street food scene that you've got there. What do you guys think about that scene? It's just amazing, isn't it?
It's amazing street food scene.
I knew Apoor would speak about that. It's food and it's streets. That's where we dated all the time in India, only on streets.
He's a big spender, wasn't he? Yeah.
He was very smart. He knew where he had to take me on dates. This hole-in-a-wall shops. This is the best kachori ever.
I love those hole-in-wall shops. You know, they're so authentic, you know, and the food, you know, because my whole family back in Indore is like from hospitality background. So we have like hotels and resorts and all that. But I never took Gauri there. I took her to like the small hole-in-wall shops to just, you know, taste that authentic the food which the city has to offer. And like, say, for example, Indore is famous for samosas and kachoris and all this deep fried stuff, which I know it's not healthy, but people love it. And so there's one market which I would like to, you know, tell about. Is like, it's a jewelry market. And then after the daytime business hours, after the business hours, it gets converted into a food bazaar. So from 8 p.m. to like 2 a.m. in the morning, it's all like food bazaar. So there are like 50 shops selling like different kind of street foods. And you can find each and every person there, you know, in their cars, in their motorbikes, you know, just having food and just loving that place.
It was a shock to my system the first time Apoor took me. I was studying there and I was actually a hosteler because I came from Haridwar to study in Indore and Apoor was living there. So in the evening he told me, you have to come there, and I experienced it. It was a shock to the senses for myself as well, because the whole place is completely packed. There is a motorbike crossing, there's a cyclist, there is a bit of cow dung, there is this gulab jamun happening, there is kachoris, and you're trying to eat everything and still maneuver yourself to be able to be, you know, making sure that you don't fall somewhere and somebody doesn't hit you while you're just eating this gulab jamun or something. But I have to say, if you ever want to experience food, I know it's New Delhi and all the places that people think on the radar is always these talked about towns. Indore is one city that you should definitely travel for. Yes. Just food.
So you talk about samosas, and which, yeah, I think most people will be familiar with that. Yep. What's a kachori? I think you mentioned that a couple, yeah, of times.
We thought about it. I don't know how Apoor was going to explain that, but try.
I don't know. So samosa is basically like triangle-shaped pastry filled with like potatoes and peas. And kachori is, again, a round ball, you can say. And that's usually with like lentils. Okay. And it's much more spicier, but they both are deep fried and they both taste amazing.
Yeah, it's a similar family of samosas, but a different style. So if you like a samosa, you'll love a kachori.
I'm just interested by this market. That's a food market by day, did you say, and a jewellery by night, or is it the other way around?
No, the other way around.
So okay, it's a jewellery market. So you had to buy your lovely wife some jewellery and then she would eat it.
Exactly.
Is that how that worked?
That's how it worked for her.
He was so smart. He never took me during the daytime. I could never get my hands on the jewellery, ever. I'm still trying. He always takes me there at 12 in the night, but never in the morning.
Now, you're both from, we do need to go to a break, but just briefly, how did you both meet? Because you both live in different parts of the country, so.
Yeah, so I came to study in Indore, actually architecture. Apoor was already living there, but we were just studying there. To be honest, Melbourne brought us together. We knew each other, but it was just a coincidence that I was interested to study landscape architecture, which was my postgrad course, and Apoor was planning to do the same. So all those years of 5 years of Indore was just being friends. friends and just talking and chatting. But it was only after coming to Melbourne and this Melbourne University and studying landscape together that we really thought, okay, let's get married or let's be together. So actually,
it's a feel-good story, isn't it?
It's India didn't really bring us close together at all.
Well, with that street food, yeah.
I know. I was going to the shops, really.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're on the Escape Hour with Woodbus, Mark, Fiona and myself, Stefan, and our two lovely guests, Apoor and Geldy. So, we were talking before we went to air about street food.
Yeah.
And
Deep fried street food. Because Indian food has such bold, amazing flavours, and they're brought together by a whole bunch of different ingredients to create that, and there is commonality, but it's how much it's all weighted and so forth. So let's talk about how you have done that to your chais. We were talking a bit before about the morning chai, the afternoon chai. Let's walk through that again and how you arose at getting those ingredients here in Melbourne, because that's the difference. You can't just go to an Indian market here. Yeah. Most things are available, but climate changes the flavour, importing changes the flavour, local ingredients taste somewhat different. How did you go through that process to arrive at the chais you got today?
Yeah, it does. You know, so when we started, we did like a lot of experiments in terms of getting the spices and teas from different parts of Australia as well, because we initially thought we can get everything here in Australia and we can have like, you know, make chai from Australian products, but we were not getting that you know, the real taste of a chai which you can get in India. So then I went to India and then I met different distributors who were supplying teas and spices. So I went down south to source some spices. It was hard to get everything here because of customs, you know, but then it all worked out, and now we have like suppliers back in India all set up who send us like teas from Assam and then spices from down south. So and with the recipe, we have worked out on recipe.
What percentage of your chais would you import direct so you can create them? Would that be more than half of the ingredients do you bring in direct for your specific chai?
It's like all...
Most ingredients are coming from India now.
But we blend it here.
Yeah. I think we were very conscious about the fact that we didn't want the chai to doesn't taste fresh and, you know, authentic. Beautiful and authentic. Mm. And at home, a spice is just ground and you make a chai.
Right.
So we always wanted, if people are drinking chai in Melbourne and Australia, it should be blended here. It should be as fresh as possible so that it's just coming from the kitchen from our home. So, which is the reason why we get all the whole spices to us, but we blend and grind them here so that when you make a chai, it's a fresh spice. It's not just a stale spice sitting in India and it's just coming like that. So, which is why. But the tea, I think, is a very important part of chai, which people don't talk as much as about spices, and that's the reason why our tea is sourced from Assam in India. It's a tea that's a caramelly tea. It's really chocolatey. It's really dark. It's not a traditional English breakfast or an Irish breakfast or orthodox tea. It's a very strong
tea. It's quite strong, I was going to say.
Quite a strong tea, and it's very bold in flavor. That's how you actually get that blend of spice along with that caramelly tea, which actually makes the masala chai really yummy.
Can you drink the black tea on its own?
Absolutely, you can.
It's lovely.
It's beautiful. Okay. I just have tried that with a lot of my friends who think...
So we'll explain you, like, a chai basically have two parts, you know. So there's a part of black tea component to it.
Which is the chai.
And then the masala, which is the blend of all the spices.
Mm.
So that's how we keep, like, chai back in India. We don't mix, like, spices and tea together and just, you know,
like the wet chai that's quite
popular
here.
Like the wet chai, yeah. So there are two parts. You take a teaspoon of black tea, and then you take some spices and then brew the chai all together with the recipe which we, you know.
And the milk, because otherwise it's English breakfast, not chai.
And I think that's why we keep it separate, because everyone has a personality, you know. Your English breakfast is very different to my English breakfast sort of thing. How strong it has to be brewed. Yeah. So if the tea and spices are separate component, everybody's just having their own way of drinking it, how much spice to how much black tea they like. That's really... You let them be the way they want to have chai. There's no rule to the chai, to be honest.
Mm. So when you're going back to India, you come from two different parts of India. How do you decide where to go set aside family, but from going back and having the pleasure of being in India, how do you decide what to do and what hierarchy? I can see you looking at each other, which
it's a hard question. We always say that no matter when we go to India, we're just stuck around the family hometowns and we're just doing things around the family and the home. But nowadays we've started doing things away from the family and to be able to convince them, look, that we cannot be just traveling these three towns in India every time we come to India. We have to go around somewhere else as well.
So what's on your hit list? What, from an Indian point of view, going back to India is, because you've probably done a lot of the big stuff, what are the things from a lifestyle point of view that, and also as your child or children grow, what do you want to take and show them?
Yeah, I basically want to go up north, which is a place called Ladakh, which is up in Himalayas. And that's a stunning landscape, you know. And that place I love because it's really unexplored right now. And I know it's going to be like flooded with people in
very soon. Yeah.
So that's one place in my mind.
Damn hippies.
No, it's still not.
It's, you know, those places like you say, like you don't want to adulterate and you're disturbing the ecology. It's sort of that sort of beautiful, pristine place.
How do you describe it?
So it's like...
Desert?
It's mountain. It's snow.
It's mountain snow.
It's basically snow.
Like Alps.
I would
say like Alps, basically.
Yeah. And really, really
and
arid. And
there's still like roads which are not like solid roads. So they're dirt paths. So you have to, you know, hire a bike and go and hike and all that kind of thing. So I love doing all that. So that's one place which definitely is on a mind.
Yeah, and I have to say mine would be deserts of India. Like I haven't, I've been to Jabalpur, Jaipur and all the things you do, but I haven't really been to smaller parts of Rajasthan that are very different.
Is it the Gobi?
Sorry?
The Gobi Desert. No, it's Sahar Desert.
Right. Right, yeah, so do the camel trekking through Indian deserts. Rajasthan, is it?
Rajasthan,
yes.
Right.
So what appeals to you about that? Is it the beauty of the dunes?
Yeah, it's the dunes. It's just dry. It's not that, you know, because I think I've lived a lot in Delhi and because Haridwar was such a small town, I was never able to live...
What is a small Indian town? Okay. Indian people?
It's actually the size of Melbourne, but I'm sorry, I still call it small. Yeah, somebody actually asked me, then I was like, really? Let me Google the population of... And then I'm like, oh my God, that's like Melbourne and I'm calling it small, but that's small relative to the pack. From Haridwar, but it's just that I have being in India, I never have explored India as India. Mm. I think after coming out of India, we have really questioned that we did not explore this country. Mm. It's only when we hear it from people who have actually traveled from here, when they sit down and talk about, oh, I love the culture and this is what, and then we say, yes, we missed out on all of these things. You didn't appreciate that when we were there. So now when we actually go back and go home, we tell our parents that, look, we need 5 days or 7 days from this trip that we want to be able to just see things that we just completely missed.
Mm. And they think we are mad. You know, why do you want to travel to India? You know,
yeah, like, you've come from Australia. Yeah. You've come from Australia. Why
so they don't
you?
Have a passion to join you?
No. They do have a passion, but they think, you can just go somewhere else. You know, because you were living in India. You know, before. You know, so they're like, you can go and explore some other place.
Mm. So yeah, fair enough. I get that.
It's just that you already have it. Why would you not just go somewhere else? But for them, we try and tell them, look, we don't have it anymore. We want this now.
Yeah, but that's the luxury of being at home and being spoiled about being surrounded and taking it for granted.
Yes, I think take for granted is the word.
So for somebody that's never been to India, is planning a trip to India, which part should they make their first priority if they don't have a lot of time, if they want to go to a couple of places in India, where should they go?
I think I'm not going to... I have to say that people... No, look, people might say I'm from Haridwar and that's why I'm saying that. But I just think people love to see the River Ganges every time they want to go. And they go to Varanasi as one of the main spots to go to. Mm. And I think it's a difficult town. Like, it's really busy and it's hard to get through. But if you want to really experience the River Ganges part and you do not want to head to the most touristy and obvious place, go to Haridwar. It's next to Rishikesh, just to put in context. It's where the bees live, so it's not a touristy place. You're just getting a little bit off the mainstream tourists. And you will be able to see the River Ganges in a much more pristine, clean environment and enjoy all the ghats and the beauty of the River Ganges. So I'd say Haridwar for sure as a northern city.
That sounds fabulous.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
This is the Escape Hour on Joy 94.9, and we have been talking all things India today, and my God, it's been a fantastic show. Comes to a serious part of the show where we talk about gay and lesbian rights in this spectacular country. And look, India has a fairly strange track record with GLBTIQ rights, which we've discussed before, and it's very similar to any country which is fairly conservative, and we do just suggest that when you go there that you don't flaunt your sexuality. Indians don't flaunt their sexuality on the street, and we just recommend that if you're a member of our lovely community that you take that into consideration as well. We do have a question for you, and the question is, do you like to roll or fold?
So maybe a little bit of context.
I'm not too sure what that really means.
Your clothes, when you travel, to put them in your suitcase, do you roll? Are you a roller or a folder?
What do you think of?
I'm on air right now.
Okay. We'll comment about this later. So clearly we don't know whether you're rollers or folders. Goodness me. You did mention something about a chai flask before we move on to the next show.
Yeah, so, yeah, we just thought, you know how we were talking about the trains in India and how you get the chai at the trains of India? We always wanted chai to be available to people when they're just sitting and the chai gets delivered to them. So you can just sit down, pour over a chai in your cup and just have it wherever you are. So chai flasks are getting delivered in the city.
So you can order them through Foodora and they will be delivered to your offices or your home every time.
Or your studios, guys.
Oh, hey, why not? That sounds wonderful. And with regards to the folding and the rolling question, it does throw most people most week, so I don't know what we're asking. But you're so glamorous, you'd be a folder. I will
definitely figure that out eventually.
Yes, if you could let us know before next week's show, it's very important.
We keep statistics.
This is the Escape Hour. We are ready to go to the next show, which is absolutely amazing. We've got Checkpoint on for the next 2 hours, and those guys are out of this world. I'd like to thank Stefan for being on the show today. Fiona, you have panelled out of this world once again.
Perhaps.
Perhaps, perhaps, perhaps.
Perhaps.
Our beautiful guests, you have been wonderful today, and we'd love to have you back on the show again.
Thanks for having us.
India is one of my favourite countries in the world, and I just look at you and I want to go straight back. Mark Adams, we've got your logie out the back. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.